Thanks, Marama. Kia ora, welcome to the panel on RNZ National. I'm Karen Hay. I'm here for Wallace Chapman, and thank you for your texts regarding freedom campers. This texter says, I've seen so many badly behaved Kiwis freedom camping and staying at dock sites or huts that have honesty box payments and never paying. There's an entitlement attitude when they're challenged by anyone. And James in Otutahi says, this sounds like people on holiday, but let's be careful with rules around self-contained vehicles. We have a huge housing crisis, and I've met families living in cars. Our panellists today are Lana Searle. Kia ora, Lana.
Kia ora, Karen. How are you?
Not too bad. And Chris Finlayson. Kia ora, Chris.
Kia ora to you.
Our text number is 2101, and we welcome your views. It's 8 minutes past four, and some parents want to see changes to the school holidays, saying that if Auckland's school holidays line up with a move to level two, it will cause childcare issues with parents needing to get back to work. The next school holidays are due to start at the beginning of October. In a statement to the panel, the Ministry of Education said, we've been asked to provide advice to the Minister for him to consider whether the school holidays should be brought forward. That advice has not yet been provided, and it is premature to presume what it might be or what decision the Minister may take. Well, we're joined now by Auckland Grammar Principal Tim O'Connor. Kia ora, Tim.
Kia ora.
So the Ministry is putting together advice on this. In your view, is it possible to bring forward school holiday dates?
Well, anything's possible. Is it in the best interest of education? The answer is no. And it appears to me that the only reason that it's become a discussion point is because there's been some noise around it rather than what's best for education.
Do you have some sympathy for those parents, though? Some have told staff, for example, that they don't want to have to deal with childcare should level two and school holidays coincide.
Yeah, but we're talking about a Ministry of Education whose primary focus should be on advocating for the education of our young and on promoting excellence in teaching in the country. So from that point of view, and from a point of view as someone who leads a school, we have aspirations of excellence for our young men. We have plans in place. To shift those plans now would actually remove aspirations for young people.
So it's just a fact of life, just live with it, the level four lockdown and all that that brings.
Yeah, we've talked to our young men about the fact that these are not necessarily unprecedented times in our country. In fact, we're actually privileged to be able to learn in an online environment rather than perhaps in like the 1947-48 polio epidemic where they had to learn via correspondence for 4 months. So let's use the situation we have. Let's really progress with learning under these 5 weeks that we've got online. Let's complete online assessment and examination so that we can actually get the best possible qualifications out of the year.
So it's fair to say that this idea of moving holidays is not going to get a lot of support from you.
Oh, look, we just wouldn't have an early holiday. We've got to carry on. In my mind, this is really is a knee-jerk reaction if it is made. It's not one that has been signalled as part of a Ministry of Education plan, so why would we look at it? We've already communicated with our parents. I communicated with them this morning via our daily live stream message that we're reaffirming that our focus is on teaching, on learning and assessment, and we're going to stick to it, and that they should ignore discussions in the media about school holidays starting earlier, because merely they are a distraction for young people who are trying to learn.
But a lot of your parents wouldn't have any problems in terms of paying childcare, would they?
Oh, that might be a wide-scoping generalisation. We have parents who come from decile one backgrounds right through to the highest decile backgrounds. So, you know, we would have some of all. We have 33 different ethnicities across the school and a real range of deciles.
So a wide-scoping generalisation, fair enough. But if it came down from the Ministry that you had to do it, would you do it?
No.
You'd refuse?
Mm. Well, we've got to get on with what we've got planned. And I, of course, would follow Ministry instructions if this was something that was planned. But this is not to the education advancement of our students. We've got students who will be sitting Cambridge examinations in 3 weeks' time. I've got to look after them first, and that's what I'll be doing. That's where my primary obligation lies.
While we've got you there, you want to go ahead, Chris?
No, I was simply going to say Tim O'Connor's the best principal of the best college in the country. And if he says that what matters is educational excellence, then I'm 100% behind him. I hope I don't sound unduly oleaginous, but at the end of the day, it's not about convenience, but it's about educational excellence, and that's why Auckland Grammar is the best school in the country.
You got a fan there, Tim.
No, not that one.
Hey, while you're there... While you're there, look, we know that teachers have been doing it tough, and I hear that you got this inspirational message from the Secretary of Education, Iona Halstead, last week, and that you really loved it.
So every principal in the country received messages, daily messages from the Secretary for Education.
It was a poem, I believe.
I just can't carry on ignoring messages from the ministry when it comes just with a poem and say let's just keep calm and carry on. I really need the Ministry of Education to be focused on, you know, best practice teaching, pedagogy, helping us with online instruction, rather than sending us inane poems.
Well, it was pretty basic on the page, to be fair, but we thought that we'd bring it to life for you because we've got nothing better to do here in Level 4. So we jazzed it up a bit for you and we put some music behind it. So this is the poem that was sent by the Head of Education in New Zealand, Iona Halstead, as a special dedication to all the teachers and principals doing it rough in Level 4. Take it away.
We teachers are a flexible breed, yet many resources we do need, not only books and magazines. It's now the age of Zoom and Teams. Summer was somewhat more relaxed, our PCs not as hot and taxed. After an interlude of face-to-face, Corona again steps up her pace. Will we beat her? Will we succeed? We'll do our best to take the lead. With growing online expertise, we'll bring the crisis to its knees. Not too daunting, the challenge or the tasks. Equipped with humour and our masks, we stand at the helm, all hands on deck. Let's drink a toast to digital tech.
That make your day, Tim?
Very good.
It makes me want to go and have a drink. Thanks very much.
We'll send you an MP3 if you like.
Oh, thanks. I'd appreciate that.
You can play it over and over again, but you must have got some inspiration from that.
Oh, I got a laugh from it, and I think others probably did the same. We all need a laugh in these times, don't we? We need to keep our sense of humour somewhere in the mix.
That's very true. Well, Iona Halstead said it was a light-hearted and genuine vote of thanks to our colleagues in Tāmaki Makaurau, although she hasn't heard our recorded version of it. Well, perhaps she has now.
I'm sure she'll look forward to it.
Very good. Thank you very much, Tim.
Thank you. Great.
It's 16 minutes past four. And Lana, do you see any benefit in moving the holiday dates?
Oh, you know, I was biting my tongue for part of that because the minute I saw that, or I heard that that Chris was commending, you know, Tim on just how great he is, I thought I mustn't speak too soon, but I am a struggling parent. So I do have to acknowledge that it's not a perfect storm for essential workers with three kids at home, and that is the truth. I know it's not helpful with education, but that is the truth. And so if the school holidays can move, I know that would be a help for them in terms of not having to worry about getting some of that stuff done.
The downside would mean a longer term three, I think it's 12 weeks, and that would have a lot of impact on teachers' schedules because I imagine that they're all set in stone.
Yeah, nothing can be set in stone at the moment, Karen, and I think we're all starting to learn that, aren't we?
Yeah.
What's set in stone at the start of the year is a sloppy mess by the end of it with COVID.
Too true. 17 minutes past four, this is the panel, and talk about speed limits in Auckland now. And with the reduced speed limits in the city, the expectation was that road death would be reduced. However, unfortunately, that has not been the case. The number of deaths on Auckland roads almost doubled from 29 to 56 in the 12 months to the end of July this year. And serious injuries rose from 513 to 556 over the same period. period. Well, joining us now is Pippa Coombe, Auckland Councillor for Central City and the Gulf. Pippa, this is a tragedy in anyone's terms, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's really awful to see how there's such a big increase in deaths and serious injuries on Auckland's roads.
And this is an issue that's quite dear to you, obviously.
Yeah, from a couple of angles. One is representing the central city area, which has had an increase in fatalities, and just wanting our communities to be safe, and that's what I do on council. I'm all about connected, healthy, safe communities, and you can't have that with increasing road fatalities. And also from a personal perspective, being one of many families in New Zealand that's been impacted by road death.
I'm sorry to hear that, and those listening who have had similar in their whānau will be able to relate to that. Why is there an increase in deaths and injuries with a lowering of speed? Does it make sense to you?
Well, it doesn't, and there was a lot of hope that when we implemented lower speeds that would show in the statistics heading downwards. But unfortunately, I think there's been a whole variety of factors. One is that those new speeds haven't been enforced. There hasn't been a lot of education around the speeds. And also the lockdowns last year and the kind of the bounce back that we saw with more people driving, bigger vehicles, you know, there's a whole lot of factors. And then when you kind of add to that alcohol, speed, people not wearing seatbelts, poor road design, you know, all of the factors there are pointing to increased fatalities and deaths, unfortunately.
Auckland Transport Chief Executive Shane Ellison, he said a similar thing. He attributed the higher death toll to two factors. He said several lockdowns, less traffic on the roads last year contributing to the 29 deaths in the year to July last year, why the toll was lower. And the economic bounce back, he said, possibly leading to more drink driving. I don't know about that.
No, Necessarily, I haven't seen evidence that backs that up. I mean, the thing with crashes on our road network is that we might have more crashes, but they shouldn't end in death and serious injuries. And we as roading designers and enforcers of the road, you know, in terms of the police and all the agencies that are involved, can ensure that people are safe when they travel. So, yes, there's personal responsibility as well, but you've got to have the whole system working to ensure that when there is a crash, people aren't seriously hurt or worse, die.
With all the campaigns, you'd think that higher speeds were a thing of the past, and specifically people not wearing seatbelts.
Yeah, I'm surprised about that too, because it's been a campaign that's definitely been, you know, pounded into me, in that, you know, you just wouldn't even think of getting in a car without putting on a seatbelt. There's probably factors too, just about the kind of cars that people are driving. They're perhaps feeling safer because they're bigger and more powerful. When you've also got, New Zealand traditionally has got a older vehicle fleet, which means less safe vehicles. When you have younger people driving vehicles that don't have such a high safety rating, that also can have an impact on the deaths and serious injuries.
I believe there are just like literally hundreds of cars coming into the port, though, on a daily basis, new stock.
Yeah, we've seen, you know, like there doesn't seem to have been any drop-off because of lockdown in terms of vehicle sales. It's, you know, it's a big factor in Auckland that we're actually, you know, the population's increasing as well, which is probably another factor, and we've got more people driving.
Are these road fatalities people in cars or on bikes or pedestrians, or have you got the stats for that?
I haven't got them in front of me, but I know it's a very concerning trend in that there is an increase in people being killed who have been walking or cycling, which sometimes we call vulnerable road users. And that's, you know, that's a big concern. because we want people to be considering alternative modes of transport and getting around, especially for shorter trips, getting out of cars.
And you said not so much policing. Are not many tickets being handed out at the moment?
Well, I think that's what the Herald article today picked up on, because it came out of a Lagoima request, an OIA request to the police, asking about number of speeding tickets. And it's actually been a very low number. They haven't actually done a targeted campaign. And, I appreciate with the police, they've had a big drain on their resources over the last year, particularly because of COVID. And so they haven't been able to put the resources they'd like to into a targeted campaign. But that's what we really need to see, because I don't think there's been a connection yet to the fact that speeds have come down, and an education campaign, an enforcement campaign linked to that.
Well, Pippa, thank you. Thanks for joining us on the panel.
Kia ora. Thank you for the opportunity.
Auckland Councillor for Central City and the Gulf. And Chris, Auckland Councillor following this Swedish Parliament goal and strategy for road safety, it's called Vision Zero. And what that is this ethical stance, and it states that it is not acceptable for human mistakes to have fatal consequences. You can't argue with that, and I appreciate that you're not a road safety expert, but ethically that's the right stance, obviously.
Oh, sure. But I think you asked the critical question, which is, who are the victims? And unless we have a breakdown of whether it's pedestrians or cyclists, then it's very hard to make a compelling comment about what needs to happen. But in principle, the Swedish approach that you have articulated is exactly right. I, for myself, think that in certain of the streets of Auckland, road design is a problem, and cyclists and motorists having to share a road is a recipe for a disaster. And so I wonder whether they're the sorts of things that the council's going to have to take a good look at.
Which is major, absolutely major,
which
to change
I
all that.
It's a major issue, but I see it in Wellington. I mean, if you drive along the parade, Celia Wade Brown's crazy cycleway is just a recipe for disaster. And so if I've got, and I'm a great fan of cycling, I'm in awe of the people of The Hague. Cyclists and drivers get on very well. There's mutual respect shown. There is not that respect shown in New Zealand, where I think both cyclists and drivers are aggressive and arrogant. And I do think we do need to look very closely at road design, because in this country, I think that is a contributing factor.
Lana,
I've got to agree with you, Chris, because I'm a cyclist too, Karen, and I, the stuff that gets hurled at me, abuse and physical things, even here in Christchurch, is alarming. And I purposely attempt to not be that cyclist that travels too far out, of your cycle lane. And even that, it's not a good place to be, and it does turn you off that mode of transport, which is, as a country, we're trying to sort of head that way, but it's not an attractive option to take up at the moment.
What kind of abuse would you be getting? Like, get off the road?
Stuff not fit for broadcast. I get a lot of drinks thrown at me, which is when it first happened, it wasn't pleasant, and it's become a bit of a joke amongst friends now. But you're cringing every time a car goes past, because you're not sure if there's going to be abuse thrown at you. And I don't cycle in packs. I cycle pretty much alone or with one other person. And it isn't good. So you're right in terms of those numbers, knowing, where they sit and in what way. And maybe you can start to sort of break down where the problem is.
I'm just curious, though, is this because you are cycling, just generally, you're a target, or because what you're doing on the road?
I can't help it. I think it's you put Lycra on and you get on a bike, or you just get on a bike, and that seems to be the mentality. That may be a South Island thing. You bring it up at a barbecue that you're a cyclist, then you watch how the room will change. You don't have to be doing anything to already be on the back foot with how people sort of generally see you as a person. And it's that we have to change, because that's what further down the track can get a bit more nasty.
Is the Lycra absolutely necessary, though, Lana?
No, I don't think it is. Trust me, I look like a rolled roast, so I need to get away from it.
You don't have to wear lycra on a bike, do you, Chris?
You don't have to, but a lot of people do, and I've got no problem with that. But I think abuse hurled at cyclists is increasingly common, but it does go both ways. And I just really do think that road design, if we're looking at a fundamental shift to different forms of transportation, encouraging people to cycle, which is a good thing, trying to utilise existing roading networks, I think is fundamentally flawed, and it needs to be given a great deal of thought, and I think in Auckland.
This text says, has Chris Finlayson tried biking the Island Bay Cycleway? Seriously, it's actually really great.
Well, I just, that is just simply wrong. And when I was canvassing out there in 2017, people weren't interested in talking about the policies of the national government or the Labour opposition. As I walked along the parade, they all wanted me to do something about the cycleway because they say you reverse out from your section and you just about run over a cyclist, and the parking is ridiculous. So that is not an answer. And using the Marine Parade of Island Bay as a precedent for cycleways is just fundamentally flawed.
It's very confusing when you see it. When you're driving, you just really don't know, you know, where the road is, do you? It's like the
exactly
cars are parked in the middle of the road.
Dangerous for cyclists. And, of course, the cyclists are cycling between cars and the pavement. And so it just doesn't work. And it's caused a great deal of upset out there. So let's have sensible cycleways, not nutty ones.